Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go. Let's go.
Yeah, middle of the field. He's got Cruz. 35, 30.
One get no punt. Broken interception.
Touchdown, Giants.
And welcome to Thursday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. So glad you could join us. Lance Meadow with you for the next 60 minutes as we break down all that is happening with respect to the New York Giants. Two ways for you to interact with us here on the program, 201-939-4513, 201-939-4513. You can also send in your tweets using hashtag Giants Chat. You can follow and interact with me directly at Lance Meadow, one word, last name, M-E-D-O-W. A lot to delve into over the next 60 minutes. Obviously, we will get to your phone calls and your tweets. Super Bowl 49 is this weekend. You have the Patriots going up against the Seattle Seahawks, the two number one seeds in the respective conferences. And you know, this is an opportunity to look back at Super Bowl history. But related to the Giants, I want to hear from the fans. Who are you rooting for in this contest? And the reason I bring that up, you know, the Giants are the only team to have knocked off the New England Patriots. And they didn't just knock them off once. They knocked them off twice, including spoiling their perfect season. Are you rooting for the Patriots to win to perhaps add even more notoriety to the two Giants victories? Or are you not necessarily invested in this matchup, given that the Giants are not involved? Certainly an opportunity to weigh in on that. Odell Beckham, and I'm sure Paul Dottino covered this over the last few days, but did have a very impressive performance in the Pro Bowl. The second leading receiver in that contest had two dazzling catches that were of note amongst his many other big-time plays in that game. So we could certainly get into that. And this weekend, they will be naming all of the award winners, and Odell Beckham obviously in the running for Rookie of the Year. So we could certainly get into that as well. A lot to certainly delve into over these next 60 minutes. The other storyline that I wanted to touch on, if time allows today, we're seeing a lot of coaching changes around the NFL landscape. Some have impacted the NFC East, and it's very early in the game. Free agency has yet to happen. The draft, obviously, a few months away. People are starting to scout and look at the up-and-coming prospects. But from a coaching aspect, when defensive coordinators, when offensive coordinators change within the conference, obviously it impacts the type of style that the Giants are going to see throughout the course of the upcoming season. The Cowboys are pretty much going to remain intact. They have brought back Jason Garrett, as well as a couple of their coordinators. Though Callahan, who was their offensive coordinator slash O-line coach, is no longer with the team, but they still have Scott Linehan. The Redskins have changed defensive coordinators, so that will be a new wrinkle that they will add into the mix. And Perry Fuel, the former Giants defensive coordinator, was just hired as their secondary coach, so there's certainly some familiarity already within the division given the ties between the Redskins and the Giants. The Giants obviously adding Steve Spagnuolo back to the mix as defensive coordinator. And then you look at the Philadelphia Eagles, some structural changes in terms of management, who the GM is, who is in charge of personnel, but for the most part, the Eagles coaching staff is going to stay intact. So the Redskins, the one team right now, at least on the peripheral, that looks like they're going to have at least some new schemes in play in terms of their defense. And they have a young secondary as they brought along Breland and Amerson over the course of this season, and they're known for their linebacker play with Arakpo and Kerrigan. So we could certainly delve into perhaps what changes are in store for the NFC East. I know we're really looking ahead, but there has been some coaching movement over the last few days and last few weeks, and it is tied in to the NFC East division. But let's start with the Super Bowl. Obviously, the biggest game in the NFL coming up this Sunday in Arizona, the site where the Giants beat the Patriots. So there is some historical ties to both New England and the Giants in this contest. And you have an intriguing matchup because you have one of the best defenses in the National Football League going up against one of the most prolific offenses. And New England's defense was certainly highly ranked during the course of this season. So there are plenty of storylines in terms of the X's and O's of this matchup. But obviously, getting back to the question regarding this program, and we will be getting to your phone calls and your tweets momentarily, who are you rooting for? If Seattle beats New England, does that take away from the Giants' two victories, from at least a historical context? Whereas if New England beats Seattle and prevents the Seahawks from becoming the first team to win back-to-back Super Bowl titles since the Patriots were able to do it about a decade ago, does that even make the two Giants' victories that much more impressive? Because, you know, New England has built as close to a dynasty as you're going to get, at least in recent NFL history, considering the success that they've been able to maintain over the last 10 years or so. And the only team that has disrupted that consistency has been the Giants. This is Tom Brady's sixth appearance in the Super Bowl. He's won three. The two losses have come a result of the New York Giants. And both of those games were tightly contested, big game-changing plays in terms of what the Giants were able to do. You look at the Mario Manningham catch in the most recent matchup between the Giants and the Patriots. And then you go back to the first one. Obviously, it goes without saying, the David Tyree catch. But there were also some notable defensive plays. The pass rush that was able to get things going. They were able to fluster Tom Brady in the first of the two matchups between the Giants and the Patriots. And that's why a lot of the fan base is excited that Spags is back, because it brings back the memories of what the Giants have been known for. Not necessarily in recent history, but during the course of this franchise over decades, winning the battle in the trenches. And if you look back at those Giants-Patriot matchups, winning the battle in the trenches is something that certainly comes to note in terms of what even happened in the most recent match. Remember Tom Brady trying to throw the ball away from the end zone and the Giants getting that early safety because they set the tone early with their defense. So that is something that the Giants have addressed already this offseason, and the next stage is obviously in terms of personnel. But once again, from a historical context, and we could start to look back, and I know a lot of the Giants fan base, you like to go through the comparisons, you like to go down memory lane. There's no better opportunity to do that as we start to look ahead to Super Bowl 49. And if you want to get into the matchup as well, obviously this is a Giants-centric type of show, but everybody is invested into the Super Bowl, because those of you who follow the Giants, those of you who are passionate about the NFL, you obviously have seen both of these teams throughout the course of this year. And the Giants went up against the Seattle Seahawks earlier this season. And if you look back, that was a highly contested game for three quarters. You know, the score doesn't necessarily say that, but it got away from the Giants in the fourth quarter. For the first three quarters, the Giants were very much in the mix, and Russell Wilson and Marshawn Lynch obviously went to work in the fourth quarter. And they also met the Seahawks in 2013 as well. The weather was not very cooperative here at MetLife Stadium, and it was a game in which the Giants' offense was plagued by turnovers. So there is some familiarity between the Giants and the Seahawks, but it goes without saying, when you look at these two teams, it should be certainly an intriguing matchup given the fact that Seattle has been very consistent during the course of the season. And the same thing could be said with respect to New England. And the larger picture, delving into what the Giants need to do moving into this offseason, you know, when you take away what Seattle was able to do, what New England was able to do, you know, how can the Giants utilize those principles to improve their roster moving ahead? The one thing that jumps out to me about the Seattle Seahawks this season, Percy Harvin, who they traded to the Jets very early in the season, but there was a lot of chatter about how it was going to disrupt the flow of the team. They don't have necessarily a great deal of depth at the receiving core behind Percy Harvin. He was such an integral part of not just their offense, but their special teams. How would Seattle adapt? And the Seahawks have done a really nice job adapting leading up to the Super Bowl. They had won 11 of 12 following that loss to the St. Louis Rams, which was immediately after they traded Percy Harvin. But other players stepped up. And this is somewhat in relation to what the Giants had to deal with this season. When you have guys that leave the team via trade, that get hurt during the course of the year, you want to see your depth chart emerge. And that was present from the Giants rookie class this season. A lot of players took advantage of their opportunities. And even some undrafted players or journeymen, guys who had been moving around the league, took advantage of their opportunities as well. You look at a player like Mike Harris, the corner who was brought over from the Jacksonville Jaguars. Now, that's a player that was not necessarily established in the NFL, didn't necessarily have a dynamic resume, but he got an opportunity with the Giants, and he made the most of it, especially late in the season where you started to see him earn his true colors and showcase his true colors. So, you know, that's what I think he could take away from a big scale picture when it comes to the NFL. When you look at the Seahawks, when you look at the Patriots, both teams had dealt with some injuries, lost some personnel, but other players stepped up. You look at New England's running game, for example. Jonas Gray, who had that 4-touchdown game against the Indianapolis Colts earlier this season. Now, Jonas Gray was not a household name. Jonas Gray was not a running back that everybody was going to say this was going to be a player that was going to do the heavy lifting for the New England running game. And what happened? He took advantage after certain players went down via the injury bug, whether it be Shane Vereen in particular, who had been in and out of the lineup. They brought back LeGarrette Blount, who certainly provided a lift. Tom Brady has worked with some unproven commodities at the receiver position, and they have also flourished. Brandon LaFell, who was with the Carolina Panthers last year, who had a great season. Carolina tweaked its entire roster by getting rid of a lot of the established veterans, and LaFell found a spot in New England, and he has been an integral part of this offense. So, you know, teams that get to the Super Bowl, and you can even say this about the Giants during their run, players coming back, O.C. Umanyora got healthy during the most recent Super Bowl run, and all of a sudden things started to click with respect to the defense. But the depth chart is such an important role in the NFL chatter, because if you can have the third and fourth tier players absorb the injury bug and make it seem as if you never even dealt with the injuries, you know, that says a lot about the fortitude of your team. And the Giants certainly were battle-tested in that department, and a lot of other teams during the course of the NFL season. So that is certainly a prevalent storyline that is in relation to the Patriots and the Seahawks, as well as the Giants. We're going to open up the phone lines here at 201-939-4513. Hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. You can follow and interact with me directly at Lance Meadow. One word, last name, M-E-D-O-W. Once again, the big question for the program: who are you rooting for in this Super Bowl, given the fact that the Giants have been the only team to knock off the Patriots during the course of this dynasty, if that's how you want to at least evaluate the Patriots? So, you know, if New England wins, does that preserve those two Giants victories? Not that they're going to lose anything, but does it give it a little bit more push up in the rankings? Whereas if Seattle wins, you have another NFC team that would have knocked off New England. Let's open up the phone lines. We start with Dre in Atlanta. Dre, what's happening?
Hey, what's going on, Lance? How's everything going?
I'm doing well, Dre. How about yourself? What you got for us?
Well, I'll tell you what, to answer your question, I hope I'm kind of indifferent. So I don't like anything coming out of Boston, but I'm going to have to go with I need the Patriots to win. For this reason, a win, if Patriots beat LOB, it solidifies both Giants' win. You know, it shows that it can be a fluke, you know, that we caught the New England Patriots on their best day and took them down. The 18-0, you know, highest scoring offense of that era in the 2007 era, and it shows that it wasn't a fluke, the 2011 Super Bowl. So what it does, it kind of puts both Giants teams on a pedestal if they beat New England. I mean, if New England beats Seattle.
Well, I figured that that would be sort of the sentiment of most of the Giants fan base, and the fact that they were able to knock off the Patriots when they were battling and en route to perfection says a lot about what the Giants were able to accomplish. So, you know, if New England wins, it makes what the Giants have been able to accomplish even that much more impressive, considering the fact that they're really the only team that has stood in the way of New England perhaps walking away with a sweep when it comes to Super Bowl appearances. So if New England does win, I think it certainly boosts where those Giants' two victories stand.
It does. But I do have a question for you.
Sure, what you got?
These two questions. One, did we release Trendon Holiday, or are we still actively looking for someone to handle our special kickoff returns and punt returns?
Well, Trendon Holiday, it was an injury settlement that the Giants and Holiday came to, because obviously, if you recall, he was put on IR right before the 53-man roster was finalized. So if you're asking, do the Giants have the rights to him, the answer is no. He is not currently on the roster.
Okay. And my next question is, P-Dot talked about how the Giants need a blocking tight end that does have some pass capabilities. Watching the Senior Bowl, you know, and I saw two tight ends that could come out in a later draft picks, probably four or five, that the Giants pick up. Boyles out of Delaware, and I think it's Zolak from Notre Dame. Both of them every time they ran to their side, the running backs had at least 5 to 6 yards on each carry to their side. They're very good, sound blockers. And they got some hands and a little bit of athletic ability to, you know, get down the field and separate from linebackers. I think those are two players the Giants look at. But thanks for taking my call, Lance.
You got it, Dre, and appreciate the phone call. In terms of the young prospects at the tight end position, obviously there are a number of them. Dre just alluded to two of them, and there was an impressive class, if you recall, last year too. And, you know, I'm going to go back to the conversations we had at this point and even later on in the year in 2014 with respect to young tight ends, because I think it's prevalent to what Dre just brought up. there was a lot of chatter about how the Giants didn't have a proven commodity in terms of a veteran or at least a player that was in the league for 2 or 3 years, and therefore the Giants would have to go the route of the draft. And we moved the clock forward, the draft took place, and the Giants pretty much stuck with the group that they had. And turned out to be a very good decision considering what Larry Donnell was able to provide. And don't overlook the impact that Daniel Fells had on this team this year. Now, Fells was out of football the previous season, had an opportunity, he was invited into training camp, he solidified a roster spot, and he had just as many touchdowns in terms of an impact as Larry Donnell had, and also made a number of big catches to help move the chains throughout the course of the season. Now, would you like some more versatility in the tight end spot? You could say that about any position when it comes to the NFL. If the Giants learned anything, it's that you can never have too much depth. With that being said, though, when you look at how the Giants focused on that position last season, you know, if you look at trends, and trends change. A lot of people call in and wonder, you know, when are the Giants going to take a linebacker in the first round? And you got to go back to Carl Banks, the last time the Giants took a linebacker in the first round. So it doesn't mean that the Giants will never take a linebacker in the first round again. But, you know, if you go back on track record, on history, I bring this up because of the tight end position. Last year, we were having similar conversations. Well, the Giants maybe need a blocker, a versatile all-around tight end. And, you know, they had those commodities already on the roster. Sometimes you just need to give the players that didn't have a great deal of playing time some more opportunities. And that's exactly what happened with Larry Donnell. And that's exactly what happened at all positions this season, given the impact that the rookie class had out there. So, you know, don't overlook the players that are on the Giants roster right now. And perhaps what another offseason could bring to the table in terms of their development. Now, Daniel Fells, it was his first offseason with the team. If they choose to keep things as is in terms of the nucleus, you know, that would give him more time to gel and digest the offense. Larry Donnell, very young guy. And keep in mind, he was on the practice squad, then he was on the roster in 2013, didn't get a lot of playing time as an offensive player, utilized more on special teams. Okay, now he steps up his reps, but if you look at the sample size, it's still very small. So think about what now another offseason will do. And when I say development, I'm not just talking about what he could do in terms of receiver. I'm talking about what Dre, the last caller, brought up in reference to being more consistent in terms of blocking. That's an important element for the tight end position, not just with the Giants, but with any NFL team. You want that versatility, and especially if you look around the NFL right now, there's a lot of teams that have two tight end formations. So, you know, they'll throw out two guys. One guy may be the better receiver, and the other player could be more known for his blocking. And if you look at what the Patriots have done this season, and it's brought up a lot of chatter in the postseason, you know, they're very crafty in terms of how they mix and match personnel and who they have eligible on the line. So, you know, a lot of people are getting very creative. And this goes to say about the entire NFL landscape, how they can utilize personnel. So, you know, just because you have one tight end who's the better receiver doesn't mean you can't utilize another tight end to step in as a blocker. And that is something that the Giants have done before, and it's something that I'm sure the Giants as well as other teams are going to look to implement moving forward. But I can't emphasize enough, look at the roster first before everybody begins the game of speculation. Well, they got to go in this direction, they got to go in that direction, because the tight end position in particular was a conversation we had at great length all of last season. And once again, at the end of the offseason, when it came to training camp, it pretty much focused in on the players that were already here. Larry Donnell, Adrian Robinson, and Daniel Fells was brought in. And, you know, to the nation, it may not make a big splash in terms of names, but those guys certainly delivered when it came to the field this season. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. Hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. Let's head back to the line. Shakes is in Baltimore. Shakes, what's happening?
What's going on, man?
I'm doing well, Shakes. How's everything with you? What's happening?
I'm good. Excuse me. I wanted to get my prediction on the Super Bowl, or
sure,
who I want to win. And I also wanted to ask you a couple questions.
Okay. I got my pen and my pad out, so give me a second here. Let's hear the prediction first, and then we'll go to your game of 20 questions.
All right. Here we go. All right. My prediction on the Super Bowl, I think the Seahawks is going to win. I know a lot of people are going for these Patriots. I don't like the Patriots. I hate them. But that's not why I think that they're going to lose. I think they're going to lose because in the playoffs and the Super Bowl, the formula is a strong defense and a strong running game. And Seattle has both.
Well, let me just counter that. I'm not saying that you're wrong, Shakes. Everybody's entitled to their opinion. But when you use those classifications, which I think are good when it comes to the Super Bowl, can't you make the argument that New England has a great running game, especially since LeGarrette Blount came back? I mean, they pounded the ball against Baltimore. They pounded – well, not against Baltimore, but against Indianapolis, I should say. And then in terms of the defense, you can make the argument that New England's defense is up there in terms of Bill Belichick's top defenses. You probably have to go back to when they won their first group of Super Bowls for comparison's sakes, because the last few years, remember, New England's defense has been very up and down.
No, and you're absolutely right. But what I would say to it is that the Seahawks has a better defense, and they also have a better running game. And that's what I'm going with.
And I can't argue. I think you bring up very good points. Seahawks were up there in the top five in terms of rushing, and their defense, it goes without saying, a very opportunistic group, picking up where they left off last year. So if you're to do the comparison and give the edge to one team or the other, I would agree with you. I'd have to go with Seattle.
Yep. All right. My question is this, though. I felt like this is what was wrong with our defense last year. Our defensive tackle core and our linebackers. You know, we always got gutted up the middle. So in this offseason, I'm looking forward to addressing those two areas, linebackers and defensive tackles. My question for you is this. I'm not sure if you did any, scouting on these college prospects yet, but a lot of people getting a little high on Danny Shelton. I like Danny Shelton, but I don't know if he's worth the ninth pick. So one of my questions is, do you think Danny Shelton, if you've seen him at all, do you think he's worth the ninth pick?
Well, speaking of Danny Shelton, I had Jordan Renan on last week from NJ.com. He was down at the Senior Bowl, and we actually focused a great deal on Shelton. And, you know, keep in mind, and I'm sure you've done your fair share of homework, Shakes, knowing the way you go about your business on this program, so I never doubt that. But, you know, he was a raw talent at this time last year. I mean, a lot of people were talking about him perhaps going fourth round or later, perhaps not even being drafted. All of a sudden, in the span of one season, he now moves up the leaderboard, moves up the draft board, and is now ranked as a guy, who's perhaps a top 10 pick. But from what Renan said, and he saw him a little bit closer in person in terms of his practice regimen. I've only seen highlights and read up in terms of what he's done in games, and, you know, there's still some mechanical shortcomings and very raw talent. So at this point, I would say he still has a lot to prove. From a physical specimen, though, he is a massive guy, and he's a guy that will be able to plug up those holes and then some. So I would say there's a great deal of upside. I still think we need to see a little bit more in terms of the combine and perhaps a few more evaluations before we chime in and say and crown that he's perhaps a top 10 pick, let's say.
Okay. My last question is this. Excuse me. I'm staying on the defensive tackle, but I'm going in free agency because I feel like we need to address those two areas in free agency. Off the break, we need to go get a right tackle or a guard, either or, to solidify this offensive line, and then we need to get a defensive tackle, okay? And my two guys that I'm thinking about, and I know he's going to ask for a lot of money, so I don't know if it's in play, but my guy is Sue and also Dan Williams from Arizona Cardinals. I know how you feel about Sue, but I want to know how you feel about Dan Williams from Arizona.
Well, I love what Arizona's defense was able to do this season. I think it says a lot about the coaching within that organization. You know, it really comes down to finances. You know, he's a good player. He's made an impact. But at the end of the day, Shakes, like anything in free agency, and the Giants front office alluded to this in their postseason press conference, you know, what are these guys going to demand on the open market? And in terms of free agency, you know, what is the biggest area of concern? You threw out, obviously, defensive tackle and linebacker is where you're looking at. The one position that I think the Giants need to keep close tabs on, and this is only based on who the free agents are, safety. I think the safety position is a very interesting position to keep close tabs on this offseason.
Oh, yeah.
Three of the four guys are free agents. So it goes without saying that that's going to be a position where there's going to be activity, whether it means bringing back guys or looking elsewhere. There's going to be activity, and I don't know, you know, where the Giants front office ranks defensive tackle in terms of the needs. You look at what Jonathan Hankins was able to do this season. Hey, you know you have a young guy that you're going to be able to build around. in terms of some other young guys. You know, Marcus Kuhn has been in and out of the lineup. You know, the evaluation period is still moving forward, and then they do have veterans at that position, but you always want to build upon youth. So, you know, do you want to bring perhaps a free agent in? I would say that would be the goal, assuming obviously the finances work, but, you know, where do the Giants rank defensive tackle? Obviously, there's only a few people in this organization that can answer that question. I'm not one of them. So I think that's going to be an important discussion moving forward, but don't overlook safety. Given how the free agency period may play out, on paper right now, safety to me is the one position to watch.
I'm sorry. But, yeah, I agree. I think safety is definitely a need. I think that's the four spots that I'm looking at to address in this offseason, really, is the safety, the linebackers, right tackle, and defensive tackles, or whatever, or guard. It don't matter. Just to solidify the offensive line, we need to win in the trenches. That's how I feel. I wanted to say one last thing before I go, and I appreciate you taking my call.
Not a problem.
I'm pretty sure you don't listen to the Shakedown a lot, but we had Jay Bromley on Tuesday, I believe.
Nice.
If you didn't catch it, try to catch it because it was a great interview, man. Great interview.
Will do. Shakes, if you could do me a favor, I didn't mean to cut you off. If you could send me the link to that to make it easy, that'd be great. I'd be more than happy to take a listen.
Okay, I will do that. I'll do that when I get off.
You got it, Shakes. Good talking with you. Have a good one.
Thanks, man.
You got it. Shakes in Maryland weighing in. Will do. In terms of some of the defensive personnel for the Giants. And he did bring up Dan Williams. He calls him Danny Williams. Obviously, Shakes and him on a first-name basis, a little less formal. Shakes has made his rounds around the NFL landscape, so we don't doubt that. And you look at Williams, obviously a nose tackle. You know, it also depends on the personnel. Think about what the type of defense that the Giants have run over the course of their recent history, and that has mainly been a 4-3 defense. You look at what the Cardinals have run, that's a 3-4 defense, and Dan Williams is a nose tackle in that defensive scheme. So, you know, when you like to play the game of speculation, and I get it, I know Giants fans, you're looking ahead to the offseason, and I don't blame you. I get that there's that itchiness factor, and you want to start to speculate in free agency, but, you know, there's a lot of things that go into the process, and you heard Jerry Reese, you heard John Mara, you heard Tom Coughlin. They all address the types of things that they look for in free agency, money in terms of how much a player is going to demand, you know, whether or not it works within the scheme of the salary cap, and obviously the scheme itself. So, you know, when you're thinking about bringing in a player that has familiarity with the 3-4, you need to ask yourself, well, how will the adjustment period work if we now try to bring him in into the 4-3? So using Williams as just an example, there's no official reports, there's no ties whatsoever to the Giants organization. Last caller brought that up. He's been playing in a 3-4. Giants play a 4-3. I think that's part of the conversation that certainly can't be overlooked. Let's head back to the phone lines. Nugs is in Minnesota. Nugs, what's happening?
Hey, what's going on?
Doing well, Nugs. How about yourself? What's happening?
I'm doing all right. I wanted to answer your question as far as who I'm going for in the Super Bowl. And then I just wanted to kind of touch on what Shakes just talked about, too.
Sure.
Me, personally, I would rather see Seattle win with Russell Wilson having a poor game. You know what I mean?
So you want the best of both worlds is what you're saying. You want a victory, but you want it to be real ugly.
Yeah, because I think that he's getting a lot of credit. And not saying that Russell Wilson is not a great player or a good player, but he's getting a lot of credit for, like, if you throw Eli behind that defense, they go, like, 15-1. You know what I mean?
Nugs, I think you bring up a good point, and I didn't mean to cut you off. I'll let you continue. I think any quarterback in this league, and I don't think we need to necessarily just make it Russell Wilson and Eli Manning, you need help. And you don't just need help on the offensive side of the ball. If you have a great defense playing alongside you, hey, that's going to do wonders for the quarterback. And we could use and piggyback off of your example for Eli Manning. The 2 years that they won the Super Bowl, you know, let's not overlook the impact that the defense had in terms of that Super Bowl run, especially the most recent one. As I mentioned, a couple of guys get healthy at the right time. Defense goes out, shuts down the Atlanta Falcons in that first round, does wonders against Green Bay in forcing takeaways. You know, you need a defense. Any great, talented quarterback, even the years Tom Brady won Super Bowls, New England had good defenses too. And you're right, in the conversation about Russell Wilson, I think he's a versatile quarterback, I think he's dynamic, and I think he deserves a lot of credit for his talent alone. But when you're playing with arguably one of the best defenses defenses in NFL history, you know, that is going to ease certainly the pressure that you have on you.
Yes, sir. And I'm a Giants fan, and my whole thing is I want Eli's legacy to be recognized. You know what I mean? Like the things that he's done as far as going in the playoffs, going on the road, putting out Tom Brady twice. I don't want to see that tarnished by Tom Brady going out here and winning a fourth Super Bowl. I don't want to see Tom Brady crowned as the greatest quarterback of all time, because that's what's going to happen if he gets another Super Bowl. You know what I mean? I want to keep that. I want to keep that blemish on his record, and I want it to stay there. I really want the Seahawks to win, but I don't want Russell Wilson to be a Super Bowl MVP, because it can be like, okay, well, you got two rings, but you didn't get any Super Bowl MVPs, which means you weren't the most valuable player on your team.
Well, Nugs, it's interesting your perspective, because, see, I would think – see, you're looking at more from the quarterback comparison. You're looking Brady versus Manning. I was looking at more from the team comparison. So you're saying that if Brady wins, and I didn't look at it from this perspective, obviously that gives him another Super Bowl victory, and in terms of the comparison to Manning, it would up the cushion that he has on Manning. But from a team perspective, it's a little different, because if New England beats Seattle, then you can make the argument that helps the Giants' case in terms of the historical reference and significance.
Yeah, but we know at the end of the day, they don't talk about teams. The quarterbacks are the only ones who get wins and losses like pitchers. You know what I mean?
I hear you. Well, I think there's a focus on both. I think it's pretty much even down the line. I think we do like to get caught up in terms of the individual performances. But, you know, you look at some of the greatest teams in NFL history, people certainly get caught up in the teams, or at least the franchises that are associated with consistent winning.
Yeah, I'll give you that. I still say it's 51-49 quarterbacks.
Okay, we'll give you the slight edge, Nugs. I'm not going to battle you on that one.
and Shakes was talking about.
Oh, look at you referring to yourself in the third person. That's impressive. This program's taking all
that's
new lengths.
That's a sign of insanity. I'm going loony up in here, man. Cabin fever. I'm talking for myself.
Yes.
No, but what about Kerry Wynn? It's like I don't hear nobody. You know, Giants fans, I mean, we all pretty much are savvy. We all pretty much know, you know, got to put some work on the D-line, got to put some work on the O-line, got to get a linebacker. But it's like you said, what happened to letting the guys who are already here get that first chance? It's like last year with the tight ends, you know, me and Anita kept going back and forth on the tight ends. Larry Donnell came out, he started killing. I was about to give him a nickname, the nail in the coffin, until he started fumbling, and the only nail that he was putting the coffin in was ours, and then I had to back up off of that. You know what I mean?
Well, but that shouldn't take away from his development this season. I mean, you know, considering he's still a young guy.
Yeah, he's still developed. He still developed nice. He was still one of the top fantasy tight ends, because I won like four of my six leagues with him starting that tight end.
Well, clearly the Giants organization's looking out for your fantasy team, too, so I'm glad to hear that.
Fruitcake all around, you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
But, I want to see Kerry Wynn come in, because it seemed like he got a chance in those last couple games. He flashed. He picked up that fumble return against St. Louis, and I just feel like he reminds me a lot of a Chris Canty. You know what I mean? He's like a big guy, but he's not like a fat guy, but he's like a big, solid guy who can play the run or the pass, seems very athletic. He just reminds me of a young Chris Canty, and I want to see him get his shot. I don't want to see us spend the church's money at defensive tackle.
And I hear you, Nugs. I hear you. And listen, appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for weighing in. A number of good stuff that Nugs brought up on this program thus far, and using Kerry Wynn as the latest example to help further this conversation, it relates somewhat to the tight end conversation. Now, I understand a lot of Giants fans like to see young guys get a chance, and we've talked about that on this program time and time again. You know, last year was a great example, this past season, in which the Giants relied heavily on the youth movement. So, you know, once again, it brings me back to the point about, you know, look at who's on your roster first before all of a sudden you start playing the game of speculation about bringing in this guy and drafting this guy. You know, the Giants invested in a great deal of young talent in 2014. Some undrafted, some were brought in via the draft, and those were the players that they relied heavily on. And Wynn is another player who got a great deal of notice late in the season because he was able to take advantage of his opportunities after the injury bug. And he made this roster for a reason. And I was talking about this on our radio broadcast during the course of the season. A lot of people tend to forget, you know, it came down to that final roster spot where it was Israel Adonijé, if you recall, who came into training camp. The Giants brought him in, veteran presence, and he had a great preseason, Israel Adonijé. And the Giants chose to keep Kerry Wynn over Israel Adonijé. So, you know, it says a lot about Wynn, what Wynn showcased during the course of the preseason as well as in practice every day. You know, that was where he made a name for himself, and it jumped out to the coaching staff. And that's why they went in the direction of the young guy over the established veteran. And it worked out very well for the Giants because he did make an impact during the course of practice, over the course of the year, and then they felt confident enough to put him in late in the season, and all of a sudden, you know, he was the guy getting to the quarterback. He was the guy forcing takeaways. So, you know, that's another player. If he has another strong training camp and works hard during the course of the offseason, you know, he's going to have a very good opportunity to make this roster. And the other thing to take into consideration is you have a new defensive coordinator now who's going to bring his own opinion to the table. Not that that's going to change the chances of Wynn coming back onto the roster, but, you know, certainly this is another way for Wynn to stay hungry and continue to prove to others that he belongs in this league. And he certainly made a case for that during the course of this season. I want to get to some of your tweets because I know a lot of you who may not have an opportunity to chime in giving predictions about the Super Bowl as well as the Giants rank in terms of historical context. So let's take a look at some of your tweets, and we'll be getting back to the phone lines at 201-939-4513 momentarily. Hashtag Giants chat on Twitter at Lance Meadow, one word, last name Meadow. And we look along the list here. Let's see what Eddie Goomba at Eddie Goomba has to say. He says, Seahawks win. Hear annoying fans for a few months, referring to the Seattle fan base. Pats win. Hear annoying fans forever. Okay, so that's an interesting way to look at it. He will take the lesser of two evils. So Eddie going with Seattle from that standpoint. He's looking at it from a national context. I'm sure those of you who are passionate about the Giants have fans who are rooting for all different types of teams, including the Seahawks and the Patriots. Let's take a look at some of these other tweets in relation to the Giants and Patriots debate. Let me bring up the normal hashtag Giants chat laundry list here. Ben at Gruen Ben, who chimes in a lot, talking about the Seahawks in terms of where they stand this season, not necessarily in terms of the Super Bowl. And the Seahawks, as I mentioned earlier in this season, you know, had their fair share of struggles when you look at what they were able to accomplish during the course of the early stages. And let's take a look. Seahawks were actually better, Ben writes, without Harvin, because they were forced to depend even more on Lynch. And the offensive scheme did change. I think Ben does bring up a good point. But at the same time, it also gave guys like Doug Baldwin and Jermaine Kearse and Paul Richardson, who was their young prospect before he went down with a season-ending injury, an opportunity to get more reps. And it relates to the Giants situation because, now, even though Seattle's in the Super Bowl, they dealt with injuries, but they had a young nucleus that they wanted to see develop. One guy went down, one guy got traded, next guy stepped in, and the Giants were following that same philosophy. So I think they did mold and they changed their identity. However, at the same time, remember, you know, they always had that defense to hang their hats on, and the defense, remember, also dealt with some injuries. But they were able to maintain some continuity throughout the course of the season. They lost members of the Legion of Boom during the course of the year. Cam Chancellor missed time. Byron Maxwell, the corner opposite Richard Sherman, missed time. Bobby Wagner, one of their top linebackers, missed time. You know, it was very rare that Seattle had a fully healthy defense in place until all of a sudden the last few weeks of the season started to build up into the postseason. So they dealt with their fair share of injuries, and they lost players to free agency. Walter Thurman came over to the Giants. They lost a couple of guys on the D-line who went to Jacksonville to rejoin Gus Bradley, who was the former Seahawks defensive coordinator. So, you know, fluctuations and changes occur across the NFL. And I think that's important to note because, you know, sometimes people tend to say, you know, why me? Why does it happen to my team in relation to the Giants? And, you know, members of the Giants front office have even said this after the season. You know, look around the NFL. You don't want to always use injuries as an excuse because it happens everywhere. But, you know, the reason why I note the Giants' injuries this season compared to what other teams had to deal with. And, you know, I understand everybody always says everybody deals with injuries, so it's the nature of the beast. But once again, it's one thing to deal with injuries, and it's one thing to then lose the majority of your starters to injury. Now, you could lose 25 guys to injury, and they could all be backup players. You could lose 22 guys to injury, using the Giants number, and more than half were starters or guys who were maybe backups but still had a prevalent role based on the schemes that the Giants ran. And that's what was important to note for the Giants versus maybe what some other teams had to deal with during the course of this season. We'll get back to your tweets a little bit later on in the program. Keep weighing in your predictions for the Super Bowl. And once again, the question that I threw out at the beginning of the show, who are you rooting for and why? Mainly because a Seahawks win becomes another NFC team that would have beaten the Patriots during the course of this dynasty. Does that take away from the Giants' unique victory, or victories, I should say, in which they beat the Patriots twice? So does that mean you're rooting for maybe New England to maintain the fact that the Giants are the only team to have beaten New England in a Super Bowl? An opportunity for you to weigh in on that topic and more. Let's head back to the phone lines. Derek is in the ATL. Derek, what's happening?
Hey, Lance, how's it going today?
I'm doing well, Derek. How about yourself? What's happening?
I'm great. Hey, my prediction is, different than what I want. You know, I think New England is going to win the game, but I want Seattle to win the game. Okay, so I think New England is going to win the game because I think their offense is almost similar to Green Bay's offense, but I think they have a better defense than Green Bay did. I know styles make fights, but I just think those two things combined to what I saw Green Bay do, they were basically an onside kick for winning that game. So that's why I think New England's probably going to win that game.
Well, it's interesting because both of these teams are somewhat similar. You threw out the Green Bay-New England comparison, and both teams have great offenses. New England, I would agree with you. I think their defense has been a little bit more consistent than Green Bay during the course of this season, but certainly some similar principles. Both teams have great running games, so, you know, stopping the run is going to be a key, but I think both teams are going to do damage on the ground. This is the difference maker that I see, Derek, and I'll let you continue. I see Seattle needing more consistency from its receiving core. They can't get away with what they did against Green Bay, where you just wait around till the end of the fourth quarter for somebody to make a play. You know, somebody's going to have to step up in quarter one, two, and three. They can't just hang their hat on the running game. Guys are going to have to challenge the Darrell Revises and the Brandon Browners of the world. So that, to me, is an important element from Seattle's standpoint. And from New England's standpoint, I think it comes down to, you know, the consistency in which they can prevent Marshawn Lynch from doing so much damage that Russell Wilson doesn't have to shoulder the load of this game. Because, you know, Seattle's the type of team where they don't necessarily put Wilson in a position where he's got to throw 45 to 50 times. Against Green Bay, he had to get up there. All of a sudden, what happens? The turnovers start to pile up. So, you know, can New England, I'm not just talking about take Marshawn Lynch out of the game, at least contain him so that you get into those third and longs or second and longs where, you know, Wilson's going to have to make plays. So those are the two keys, I think, for each team heading into this contest.
Yeah, I could talk about this game all day because there's so many different matchup and points. But I wanted to get two player comparisons before I leave. So the first one is, you know, I called in the show last year when everybody wanted to get rid of Larry Donnell. And I said, no, I saw progress with Larry Donnell. I think he's doing really good. We should give him another chance. No one thought that at the time, you know. But if you look at the stats, he's way ahead of what Martellus Bennett did in his career up to this point. Martellus Bennett in the last couple of years, this last year, has actually surpassed what Larry Donnell done. But it took him almost 6-7 years to do that, you know, compared to Larry Donnell's
Just play devil's advocate, Derek, and I'll let you continue. In fairness, and it's interesting that you're looking at two former Giants tight ends. Remember, Martellus Bennett did not get a great deal of playing time because early in his career he was playing behind Jason Witten, whereas Larry Donnell, a little bit earlier in his career, he actually became a starter. So I think if you're going to compare the two, you at least need to take that into consideration.
The thing about it is, you know, if you look at the Dallas Cowboys now, they play a lot of two tight end plays. You know, offense offensive formations. Now, if Martellus Bennett had the wherewithal, he probably would have been on the other side of what's the quarterback, J.C. Witten. So, you know, not him not getting playing time, I really didn't count that.
Here's the thing, Derek, and once again, I didn't mean to cut you off. Even though he's out there, and they did give him reps with Jason Witten lined up, but, you know, the targets, just because you're out there doesn't mean you're going to be targeted. And I'm assuming when you're looking at Larry Dinnell's numbers, you're looking at his offensive numbers. You're not necessarily breaking down how many run blocks he opened up for his backfield.
Right.
So, I mean, if you're going to look at the numbers, what about looking at targets? I didn't look at this carefully. I don't know if you have. Where are the targets in comparison between Bennett and Dinnell early in his career? That would be something I would look at.
Their targets are similar. So, that if you look at their targets, they probably were, because you only got 2 years for Dinnell, but Dinnell went up in targets really, really big. You know, it took Martellus Bennett till last year with the Giants to even get close to kind of targets that, you know, Larry Dinnell did, and he did just about the same thing or more on Larry Dinnell. So I'm just saying give Larry Dinnell a couple more years.
Absolutely.
He'll probably look just like Martellus Bennett. You know, he has to work on his blocking, but, you know, that's one thing. The other comparison is that I had is DeMontre Moore, because I'm getting a lot of slack with people, giving a lot of not giving him enough credit, I don't think. I think that he's doing really well, and I think he flashed from year one and two. And the comparison is O.C. Umenyiora. You know, I'm looking at their OC's first 2 years, and basically they could be almost similar players. It took to O.C. Umenyiora's third year where he came and got 14 and a half sacks. But Larry did, DeMontre Moore is progressing. I've seen a lot of hurries. I wish I would have had a stat to show how many hurries he had, because the guy is always in the backfield when I see him on the field. Of course, he needs to work on his run blocking, but he's a young player. He's 22 years old, so he has room to grow, you know?
Well, I think that's a great comparison too, Derek, and appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for weighing in. Mm-hmm. Let's expand on the 2 points that Derek brought up in terms of the latter first with O.C. and DeMontre Moore. I think he did bring up a good point. They're looking for a little bit more consistency, the Giants, out of DeMontre Moore. But his ability to get to the quarterback and his knack for causing disruption, you know, not necessarily just getting to the quarterback, but remember, he's made game-changing plays on special teams too. You know, he has the ability to find the football and disrupt. I think that's a great way to describe DeMontre Moore's impact on this organization, on this franchise, in the early going. It's all about him getting more reps and getting involved a little bit more in the scheme. Is not necessarily a guy that's going to be out there for just those third down pass rush situations, but in the earlier downs to stop the run. And you heard the Giants coaching staff talk in great detail about how they're trying to get a little bit more consistency out of Moore. And it'll be very interesting to see what Spags has in store for him, because based on Spags, what he's been able to do with his Giants defense in the past, he loves his pass rushers. He loves those disruptive guys. So you look at the marriage between Moore and Spags, I think that's a very exciting storyline to keep close tabs on. What does he do with him over the course of the offseason? How do you see him utilized in the preseason? This is a guy that can really flourish in this system. However, you know, a lot of it falls on the player too, that the player needs to put in the work and prove that he's going to be that all-around player. And I thought it was very interesting for DeMontre Moore later on in the season when he spoke to the media, and I'm sure you can look back on the clips here on Giants.com. You know, he was very open and honest with the media. And sometimes you don't see players necessarily truly open up in terms of the ups and downs and the battles that they've had to go through during the course of the season. I'm not talking about off-the-field issues. I'm talking about, you know, learning the system, becoming an all-around player. And one of the things that I thought was very interesting, he talked about when he was in college, when you first come in and you're a superstar, things are, I don't want to say handed to you, but, you know, you don't necessarily have to work as hard maybe in practice to solidify your roster spot. You get to the NFL, you know, you've got 5 or 6 guys trying to kick you off the roster. It's a little different. And he talked about how that was an eye-opening experience. Hey, you know what? Every day you need to take advantage of your opportunities, because every day can justify where you were put on the depth chart. And, you know, he talked a great detail great detail about that. And that is something that when you see a young player put that in perspective from a mental standpoint, I think that says a lot about the maturity that DeMondre Moore has gone through over the course of his very small sample size here in the NFL. Before we get back to the lines, I also want to just piggyback off of the point that Derek brought up with respect to Martellus Bennett and Larry Dinell. I brought up both of their stats. Martellus Bennett, and I think targets is an important element in the conversation. So Martellus Bennett came into the league in 2008. He was a second-round pick by the Cowboys. He was targeted 28 times in 2008, which was his rookie year. Now Larry Dinell, 2013, was his rookie year. He had 6 targets. Then you look at Martellus Bennett's second year. Targets only went up to 30. Now, he played 16 games in his rookie campaign. In 2009, he only played 14 games. Larry Dinell in year 2, once again, played all 16 games. However, obviously more heavily involved on the offense. He was targeted 92 times. He went from 6 targets to 92 targets. Martellus Bennett went from 28 to 30. Now, opportunity is a big part in the NFL. And Dinell was the go-to guy tight end. Jason Witten was the go-to guy for the Cowboys. It's an interesting comparison, but once again, targets makes it a little bit more convoluted. Because in fairness, you know, Bennett's targets only went up 2 from year 1 to year 2. Larry Dinell, I mean, skyrocketing may not put this conversation to justice. It may not put it into perspective because he went from mainly a special teams player to all of a sudden the number one tight end on the depth chart. That was a huge jump. Martellus Bennett did not make that huge stride from year 1 to year 2. This is an interesting conversation to have, though, a few years down the road. Dinell made a huge impact and is in the driver's seat right now in terms of his development. So, you know, that is a position, while a lot of people are going to say, hey, the Giants need a name. They need somebody that's going to wow. You look at last year's storyline, they didn't necessarily bring in a guy that's going to jump off the page, and Larry Dinell did wonders for this offense. He became a huge security blanket for Eli Manning. Let's head back to the phone lines. Charlie is in Portland, Maine. Charlie, what's happening?
Hey, Lance.
How are we doing, Charlie?
Doing?
I'm doing well. What's happening with you?
Oh, besides the snow, not much. I just have to say Seattle, I think, will win. And being up here in Patriot country, I pray to God they do, because I'll be hearing about it for the next 1,000 years.
And we don't want to get you worked up, because we know how you can act when things are not necessarily clicking right.
That's right. And besides that, Seattle, just like the Giants, I believe that their defense can rush the passer, which I think is going to, just like the Giants did, is going to hurt Brady. They're going to put some pressure. I think the Patriots are going to do one thing. They're going to try to stop Marshawn Lynch and make Wilson win the game. But the thing is, with Lynch, hopefully they're going to be smart enough. They'll keep running him, but also put him out there to catch passes, because that's how he killed Green Bay. And if they put him out on the slot, or they throw a screen pass to him, get him in some space, I think that will kind of negate what Belichick's going to try to do, because he's going to put like 8 or 9 guys in the box and say, okay, Wilson, you beat us with your, you know, wide receivers. But the thing is, Seattle's got a good tight end too, so I think he's going to have a big game.
Wilson, yeah.
Yeah, Wilson, same as the other Wilson, yeah. I think he's going to have a big game. And don't sleep on JerMichael Finley. He might be back this year. He took the money last year for his injury settlement, but he said he was going to be back. So I wouldn't be surprised if he does come back, if he can play, which I think he can, that the Giants might not pick this guy up.
I knew there was going to be that added element at the end of your point. The minute you brought up Finley, I was waiting for, and the Giants may want to take a look at him. So I'm glad at least you mapped that out.
Yes, of course. You know, Mac knew, he knows him. You know, I think he'd be a great fit, you know.
Well, health is going to be the main factor, as you know, Charlie, and you alluded to that.
Whenever
you evaluate a player like that, he's got to be 100% healthy, because you certainly would rather give guys opportunities who are going to be out there for 16 games before you bring in somebody who doesn't necessarily have a better track record.
Like John Beeson?
Well, listen, John Beeson has been plagued by injuries during the course of his career. It's a different position, so I think that that certainly needs to be taken into the conversation. And, you know, also what type of direction the Giants are going to go from a defensive standpoint. Remember, the defense may change a little in terms of scheme this offseason, whereas the offense, you know, you're going to have year two with Ben McAdoo. You already saw what Donnell's going to do in your offense. So, you know, you may not have to do as much heavy lifting in terms of the personnel department. I think it's two different conversations in fairness when you evaluate your defensive players and your offensive players, at least at this point.
Yeah, I just have to, you know, piggyback on Shakes. We got to get a middle linebacker. I was talking to Paul yesterday. We got to have a plan A, and hopefully, you know, Beeson will be plan B. If he can stay healthy, great. Then we got a great backup, or if he can beat the other guy out, fine. But we got to have a middle linebacker who can actually stay on the field but also can tackle and stop the run. So hopefully we'll be able to pick up somebody in free agency and really do that.
And
we're going to need it.
And the draft is another territory to go to, too. You could always groom a young guy while you have those veterans at least start out in the early going. That's something they did this season. And Charlie, good to hear from you. Stay safe up there. You got it. In the snow, I know a lot of people on the East Coast still cleaning up. Fortunately, in the city, we weren't hit as hard as they anticipated, but I know Giants fans are spread out across the Northeast, so for those of you who were hit hard by this latest storm, hope you and your family are safe and sound. Appreciate everybody, obviously, for chiming in, watching, and listening. We're going to continue to take a few more phone calls before we wrap up the program here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Lance Meadow with you. We are with you each and every weekday from noon to 1 p.m. Eastern, 201-939-4513, hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. We'll get to a few more of your tweets as well. A lot of people weighing in on the X's and O's matchup in the Super Bowl, so certainly appreciate the insight from our listeners and our tweeters. Let's go to Andrew in Easton. Andrew, what's happening?
Hey, Lance, how you doing?
Doing
I'm
well,
going to change gears a little bit here. Have you seen anything on the lineman out of Iowa? I think his name is Brandon Sheriff, number 68.
Well, I have seen some highlights, and I've seen a tremendous amount of upside on him, and a lot of people who have evaluated say that he is certainly one of the big-time prospects to watch. So that's my limited knowledge in terms of his resume. I can't say that I've watched a great deal of Hawkeyes games during the course of his tenure, but I've read up enough and I've seen some highlights to know that he should make a nice transition to the NFL.
Yeah, I posted a video just now on Giants Chat of his highlights. He's an absolute beast, just insane. And I read on one of the scouting reports that the only thing they're not sure about is him on speed rushers. And I think it would be a waste to have him on the left, though. He should be on the right. He's just an absolute mauler, just driving people all around the field. And I think if we put him on the right, move guard, Westberg at center, would Jeff Schwartz be capable? I think he likes to play the right. Is he capable of playing the left side, do you know?
In terms of guard or tackle, we're talking.
Guard.
Yeah, he's played left guard with the Giants already. I know it's a limited sample size, but he's had experience at left and right guard. He's also had experience at the right tackle position. So the good thing about Jeff Schwartz, to answer your question, Andrew, is you have versatility there. He's a player that, you know, if the Giants were mapping out their offensive line and they had one other guy that they needed to slide in, you know, he would be the guy that you can move around. So I think that at least is an added benefit for the Giants in terms of your starting offensive line, as well as if somebody, unfortunately, would go down to injury.
Yeah, because it seems like a lot of people have almost forgotten about him because he was gone, like, all year. But hopefully this year he's healthy. And it sounds like that's kind of like what David Deal used to do, right? Didn't they plug David Deal in?
Correct. He was jack of all trades. I think that's a great example. A player that you'd like to have line up in one spot, but at the end of the day you can certainly move him around. That swing type of tackle.
Yeah, because, I mean, if we had this rookie at right tackle and Pugh at right guard – with Williams running behind him, I mean, it would be just like, it would just be old school Giants football. Like, it would just be ground and pound, chew up the clock, beat up the other team. And according to Andre Williams, the one interview I saw with him, his whole game plan, he says, is he likes to toy with them in the first three quarters and then just really turn it on in the fourth quarter. And we didn't get too many opportunities to see that this year because of his limited playing time. So I think next year, if we could put a good guard on that, a good tackle on that side with him, I think he'll be up and down the field every game.
Well, the key to the running game is obviously the play of the offensive line, Andrew. I'd appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for chiming in. So, you know, that is an area that the Giants front office addressed in their postseason press conference, that an area like any other position on this team, they're going to look to bolster, meaning add more depth, get a little bit more versatility. And you look at the Giants running game, late in the season, things got going, and the numbers were much better than what 2013 produced in terms of just team totals. I mean, they had a number of games well over 100 this season compared to what they were able to showcase in 2013. Obviously, you'd like to see Rashad Jennings stay healthy, because what the Giants envisioned when they came into last season was to have that 1-2 punch, and it allowed Williams to get a great deal of experience. But you can have those two guys together, an offensive line that gets consistency on the ground attack. You know, that could really do a lot for the Giants, considering they do have a fella named Odell Beckham, who is going to be a nightmare for just about every other defense in the NFC East, as well as the NFL landscape. Certainly appreciate everybody for weighing in during the course of this program. If I did not address your tweets, I'll try to do that off the air, but you can continue to send in your thoughts on Super Bowl 49 and the topic of, does it help or hurt the Giants in terms of their two victories over the Patriots, depending on who wins in this Super Bowl matchup in Arizona? Big Blue Kickoff live with you each and every weekday at noon Eastern. So we will have a program tomorrow for you at the same time. Enjoy the rest of your Thursday. Lance Meadows signing off. We'll speak to you tomorrow. Have a good one.
Well, here we go, here we go. Here we go. Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go, let's go.
Down the middle of the field. He's got through. 35, 30.
What an end zone punt. Broken intercepted.
Touchdown, Giants.